Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you.
Jim Hart.
Well, good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the EAL Radio Show, where you will find us every Monday evening at 7 p.m. November is a special month for us because it's our anniversary month. We're 5 years old, and the time is flying as fast as our Boeing 737-800 airplane that we are boarding tonight. We're starting the boarding process for our trip to Hamilton, Bermuda, and we want all of you to know how much we enjoy spending every Monday evening with our Eastern family and friends aboard these chartered flights. This is our 241st broadcast, and truly, we have become the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. Our listening audience now is over 450 countries around the world, with an average of nearly 1,000 listeners each week. We hope you'll participate and board our plane and be part of our show tonight. Those listening to the broadcast on their computers, all you need to do is to call us at 213-816-1611, and it will put you on Neil's producer's board. He can open your mic or telephone, and you can tell us what's on your mind, or you might just want to add to the subject being discussed. Remember, unless Neil has opened your phone connection to join the live conversation, you'll need to press the number one button on your telephone's keypad to join in. Those who cannot listen in on a computer can still hear and participate by just calling the number you just heard, 213-816-1611. Also, keep in mind that your telephone or microphone picks up any noises that might be in the background, so make sure you mute your phone or keep as quiet as possible during the broadcast. I'm going to turn this over to our captains right now. Captain Neil?
Thank you, Jim Hart. Jim, thanks so much, and we welcome all of our passengers aboard the flight tonight. We're so happy to have you with us, especially right before Thanksgiving. We'll have our senior flight attendant. She may not be in attendance, so we'll see if Joe Cotton is on board the airplane tonight, and if not, we'll have someone to replace Jill. But I have as my co-pilot tonight, Captain Steve Thompson. Steve, say hello.
Hi, Neil, and thank you, and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. And we're all set, Captain Neil. Our passengers are seated, and our flight attendants have their seatbelts on. Now, let's light up number two engine and get the show rolling down the runway.
Okay, our Boeing 737 only has two engines, so we'll light up the right side of the airplane, number two. Here we go. Sounds good to me.
Eastern Flight 242, you're cleared for takeoff.
Roger Tower, Eastern 242, and we're clear for takeoff.
Is your captain speaking? We've leveled off at flight level 350, and I'll turn off the seatbelt sign now so that you may move about the cabin. We'll take a look at our passengers in the back. I don't think, Jill, are you still available for our flight today? I don't think she is. So they're fixing.
I think she called in sick, Neil.
Okay. Well, let me see. Since we've turned off the seatbelt sign, let's go through the cabin and see who we have on board. Steve, you just take the flight controls, and I'll meander back to the back and just see who's back here with us going to Hamilton, beautiful Hamilton, Bermuda. We used to fly there years and years ago. I see manager of passenger relations, Jim Hart. Hello, Jim. Good to see you on board again.
Thanks very much. I just wanted to give a reminder to those wanting to listen to our broadcast live aboard the EAL radio show every Monday at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. You can connect by going to www.ealradioshow.com, or you can also connect with the show at our sponsor's website, www.REPAonline.com. That's the site of the Retired Eastern Pilots Association. Let me repeat the phone number for the show again, 213-816-1611. Also, as a reminder, at the end of each of our shows, time permitting, we have selected songs called Eastern Music, or music we grew up with while working at Eastern. So make sure you hang around shortly after the show to listen to selections by our producer. Now I'll turn it back over to you, and because you have more experience by walking up and down the aisle of the Eastern airplanes.
Well, thanks, Jim. And, yeah, I've got thousands of miles, I guess, but I'm strapped up here in the front, so I got Steve up there flying, and let's take a walk back through the cabin, and I see over here Chuck Albright. He's the head of aircraft maintenance. Chuck, can you open your toolbox and tell us the latest in your department?
Well, I never had a call out to go to Bermuda for an aircraft maintenance problem, but I did go out on to several of the cities served by Eastern for maintenance items. One such flight that I took as I was working in the maintenance department up in the tech service at the time, I was called out to go to Billings, Montana. We had an airplane there, had flown in, and had two engine problems. So consequently, the L-1011 was sitting there on the tarmac when I got there, and the snow was right up to the old landing gear. I mean, it was really cold. I got together with a bunch of people, and we decided that we had to change two of the engines to make it safe to continue on. So we had the passengers. They were in a hotel. They were put on another airplane and taken over to Chicago and finished their flight out to California. I, with some other maintenance people, got two engines flown in out of Atlanta to Chicago on a C-130 transport airplane out of Alaska. Well, it was really cold, and it took us about 3 or 4 days to change the engines out and get them ready. Well, one of the problems we have is an L-1011 takes up quite a bit of space to get off the runway and into the air. So we had to take all the seats out and had our minimum flight fuel on board to get to Chicago, and we backed the plane up right to the edge of the runway, and the captain and the co-pilot and his flight crew there started the engines up and really got them going. And when he was ready, I told him he'd let off on the brakes, and he did. And I never saw anything more beautiful in my life when that L-1011, as it lifted off the ground right at the end of the runway, just over this big snowbank and into the air to Chicago. So that's one of the things that we have in the maintenance department, to see that our planes are in the air and kept that way in a safe manner. Back to you.
Well, you know, Chuck, you guys really made us all feel very safe with the aircraft that we were flying. And all the departments, especially in maintenance, the field maintenance, the shop maintenance, there are so many areas of maintenance at Eastern, especially the overhaul shops. And the window shops, the door shops. Golly, Pete, I don't know how many different shops we had as far as maintenance are concerned. But I guess one of the most desired maintenance jobs was out on the ramp, out there with the airplanes coming in and getting the write-ups and taking care of the problem before the aircraft was turned around and going to the next destination. So
well,
that's where
I
guess
one of those,
you spent.
I was one of those people in Miami for about 6 years. I was an assistant crew chief for quite a while. And, yes, that was probably one of the most exciting jobs I had with Eastern Airlines. I had gone on after the mechanic to be a supervisor and then a manager. But looking back on my career, you're right. It's really fulfilling to have a plane come in with a problem and get together with some of the best mechanics I ever worked with and as their supervisor and get that plane turned around in minimum time so we could get it back in the air with a full load of passengers. And I really had a great time at that job at the Miami terminal area.
Well, you guys were certainly appreciated. And I guess that's why they paid you so much money, Chuck.
Well, it was enough to pay the rent.
Okay.
Nothing else.
Very good. Okay. Let's move on back to the cabin. Oh, my golly. Who do we have here? In row 6A, it looks like George Jenn, the famous author, the bestseller, The Final Destination, Disaster, What Really Happened to Eastern Airlines. And it is a nonfiction book, a wonderful book, a great study that George Jenn did in looking at the reasons. And also some other interesting things that he brought out in that book. George, you did a great job. And would you tell us about anything else that you're doing now? What's happening, George?
Well, thanks very much for the compliment on the book. I appreciate that. Actually, I have another book that's completed, which I've been just delaying putting out. And I'm working on another book that's about, maybe 40% done. But I really got sidetracked this week, and I want to tell you and our listeners how that came about. I was with a friend of mine who's a doctor, and he introduced me to another friend of his who's also a doctor. And we started speaking, and the second doctor, who I'll leave unnamed for right now, informed me that without knowing that I was a published author, that he was currently working on a book. And I said, wow, that's fantastic. Is it fiction or nonfiction? He said, no, it's nonfiction. I said, well, what's it about? And he proceeded to tell me a story that I have to tell you, I really had tears in my eyes. And the title of the book is Sorting Through the Rubble, A Doctor's Grueling Personal Journey from Hatred to Love. And he went on to tell me about how his daughter, who was either a freshman or a sophomore in college at the time, she was an adopted daughter. He and his wife had adopted her when she was just an infant. She was attending college. It was spring break time. And she always, instead of going to Daytona Beach or Cancun or anything like that, she always wanted to go places to, help other people out. So she had gone to Connecticut to stay with a friend of hers overnight. And the next day they were flying out of Logan Airport up in Boston and going to, I believe it was Uganda, where they were going to work in this clinic for African babies. But what happened was, on the way to the airport, the van that they were in, it was her and several other college students, was hit by another car going the wrong way on the highway by a driver who was drunk. He was inebriated. And his daughter was killed. And this is what his book is about. So he went on to tell me that, you know, gee whiz, I'm trying to get this published, and I can't get an agent, I can't get a publisher. So I said, well, do you have it? Is it completed? He said, well, it's probably 50% done. I said, well, why don't you email it to me? So he did the next day, and I read it. And I have to tell you, it was heartbreaking, number one, but it was also exhilarating toward the end of the book. And so, but there, whoever, he had a ghostwriter who was working with him, and the fellow didn't do a very good job. So what I did was, the first thing I did was contact my publisher and tell her about the book, and I said, you know, would you be interested in publishing it? And she said, yeah, you know, I really might be. You know, the name of the publisher that published my Eastern Airlines book is Changing Lives Press, and certainly this was about someone's life being changed dramatically in a heartbeat. So I called the doctor back, and I said, look, you know, the manuscript definitely needs some work, but my publisher would like to see your proposal. He said, well, I don't have a proposal. He didn't even know what it was, which I can understand because, you know, it's the first time he's done anything like this. So I said, well, you know what? I'm going to help you write the proposal. And I started working on it the day before yesterday. I anticipate, you know, take a couple of days off for Thanksgiving, and it'll probably be another week before it's finished. But I'm really excited about it, and I'm very happy for him because I believe that the book has a tremendous amount of merit. So that's my Thanksgiving week story. And I don't know if you believe in fate or whatever you want to call it, but I always have, and now even more so. Just the fact that I had never met this gentleman before, and he's a real gentleman, but we met for the first time, and the discussion went in the direction that it did, and now I'm working with him to make certain that his book gets out there on the street.
Well, George, the doctor's in good hands with you because you do such a brilliant job of writing. Really, your books, the two books that you've got out, I think there's only two. One is Final
Yes.
Destination Disaster, which I mentioned, and the other one is a fiction novel. But golly, Pete, does it sound real when you read it? I say, you know, I think I've experienced everything except some of the bad stuff in this book. But you did a brilliant job in the fiction book, and of course, real book that you put out, Final Destination, was such a book that all of the Eastern people, and I want to say thank you very much for publishing or writing that book and letting us all have it, and those that have purchased it and those that have not purchased it, I strongly recommend that you do that. And buy both of George's books. This is not something that George asked me to do, but I just see two good books that need to be read by Eastern people. So, George, thank you very much for that report. And I'm sure
well,
the doctor,
thank you, Neil.
If you can edit and if you can contribute to the doctor's works, I'm sure it's going to be another very successful book.
Well, the interesting part about it is that, you know, I'm working on my own book right now. And to tell you the truth, since I got this one, I haven't even looked at mine. It's such a story that just grabbed my heart, and I just have to help them with it. I really do.
Well,
you know,
that's great, George, and that's very good Thanksgiving message that you just brought to us, and because that's what we should all be thankful for is friends and one helping another. George, I'm going to move on further back into the cabin, back into the coach section, way back here in 17A, and where I see, I think Don is back here, and his lovely wife, George, and I mean, Dorothy. Dorothy.
Neil, I'm here. Don just separated. He had to go into a little break, but I can tell you some of the things that he was hoping to speak to you about tonight.
Dorothy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Can you hear
me? Since we're headed to Bermuda, and we're probably about a half hour, maybe a little bit more out from Bermuda. I think you and Don had been to Bermuda, and would you like, or either had planned to go to Bermuda, can you tell us about what you have researched about the beautiful islands of Bermuda?
Yes, I would love to. We did talk about going there, and unfortunately another vacation came up that the cost was a little bit cheaper, so we didn't. But we had researched some attractions that were some of the best to see. And, of course, they have beautiful sandy beaches and a variety of restaurants with all type of cuisine, in addition to Bermuda's longtime favorites, fish chowder, wahoo steaks, pawpaw casserole. But they had great guided island adventure tours that you could go by bus, a boat, taxi, or van, or just walk around, as well as cruising to amazing areas, which is something that we enjoy for offshore snorkeling of colorful coral and marine life and even shipwrecks. There's also the glass-bottom boats and sunset cocktail cruises, or plainly just walking scenic trails and village paths. You know, you can always meet locals to learn some of their culture. Or you could hire a knowledgeable taxi driver to learn the best-kept island secrets, which is always great to do, or even rent a motorboat and go on your own offshore. In addition to that, they have Bermuda always showcases historic museums of islands' history and heritage caves, historic forts, aquarium, lighthouses, churches, parks and gardens, harbors, nature reserves, and villages. One of the villages has pastel-colored houses with slanted white limestone roofs, which is something I'd like to see. And St. George in the 1600s was the first human settlement and retains its old historic aura, and it's now a UNESCO World Heritage Site, so that's a good site to take in. They also have the Royal Navy Dockyard, where it's the main cruise port, once operated by the British Royal Navy, and that really gets a lot of tourist people to see. Hamilton City, of course, is a center with shops to buy any kind of unique local products. And for nightlife, if you'd like to do that, they have clubs, bars, and pubs. They have Bermudians dancing to the traditional Bermuda Gumbies dance with rhythmic drumming. And one of the older city's pubs was the inspiration for Cheers Pubs of Boston. I think all of you remember that. So back to you, Captain Steve.
Well, Steve, before
ladies
you
and gentlemen.
Steve, before you talk about that, I've got to share a little bit about Bermuda myself. Having flown there, and of course, Steve, Captain Steve, also flown there many times. But I had the pleasure of taking a cruise from Charleston, South Carolina, with a group of realtors because I was the president of the Board of Realtors in the Atlanta area back in the early 80s. And we had chartered a cruise ship from Charleston to Bermuda. And it was a five-day trip out and back. And what a wonderful time we had. And when you describe Hamilton and St. George, Dorothy, it's just pretty much exactly the way you described it. And we had so much fun as a group, my real estate company that I own in Atlanta. We all rented the little motorbikes, you know, the two-seaters.
Nice.
And we just putted all over the islands up to St. George. We went into the caves that you mentioned, the caverns, the caves there, and then had a great time. And I was so impressed with Bermuda that I decided instead of going back to the cruise ship that, by golly, they wouldn't miss me. So I checked into one of these bed and breakfast homes that was out on Harbor Drive, and it was overlooking the bay there at Hamilton. And, wow, I mean, this was just a picture out of paradise. And so it was just a wonderful time that we had. And I don't understand why more folks don't travel to Bermuda because it's a beautiful place to go. I don't know whether you can enjoy it much more than a week because it's not that large of an area. But we certainly did. Eastern Airlines, we had I flew several charters from the New York, Washington area over to Bermuda. And so it's just a great place to go by airplane or either by cruise ship. And I've been to Bermuda both ways. And I always enjoyed not laying over because I don't think Eastern ever allowed the crews to lay over in Bermuda that I know of. But I certainly did enjoy the cruise that we took over there. Now, Captain Steve, tell us more.
Yes, thank you, Neil. And I'd like to give you some information about additional information about Bermuda. It's also referred to in legal documents as fully the Bermudas or Summers Isles or the British Overseas Territory in the North Atlantic Ocean, located off the east coast of North America. Its nearest landmass is Cape Hatteras and in the United States, and it's about 640 miles to the north, west northwest, and it's about 770 miles south of Cape Sable Island, Canada, and 956 miles north of Puerto Rico. Its capital city is Hamilton. Now, the first known European explorer to reach Bermuda was Spanish sea captain Juan de Bermudez in 1503, after whom the islands were named. He claimed the apparently uninhabited islands for the Spanish Empire, paying two visits to the archipelago Bermudez, never landed on the islands, but did create a recognizable map of the archipelago. Shipwrecked Portuguese mariners are now thought to have been responsible for the 1543 inscription in Portuguese rock, previously called Spanish rock. Subsequent Spanish or other European parties are believed to have released pigs there, which had become feral and abundant on the island by the time the European settlement began. In 1609, the English Virginia Company, which had established Jamestown in Virginia, a term originally applied to all of North American continent, 2 years earlier, permanently settled Bermuda in the aftermath of a hurricane when the crew and passengers of Sea Venture steered the ship into the surrounding reef to prevent its sinking, then landed on shore. The island was administered as the extension of Virginia by the company until 1614. Its spinoff, the Summers Isle Company, took over in 1615 and managed the colony until 1684. At that time, the company's charter was revoked and the English Crown took over administration. The islands became a British colony following the 1707 unification of the parliaments of Scotland and England, which created the Kingdom of Great Britain. After 1949, when Newfoundland became part of Canada, Bermuda was automatically ranked as the oldest remaining British overseas territory. Since the return of Hong Kong to China in 1997, it is the most populous territory. Its first capital, St. George's, was established in 1612 and is the oldest continuously inhabited English town in the New World. Bermuda's economy is based on offshore insurance and reinsurance and tourism, and the two largest economic sectors. Bermuda had one of the world's largest gross national product per capita for most of the 20th century and several years beyond. Recently, its economic status has been affected by the global recession. It has a subtropical climate. Bermuda is the northernmost point of the Bermuda Triangle, a region of sea in which, according to legend, a number of aircraft and surface vessels have disappeared under supposedly unexplained or mysterious circumstances. The island is in the hurricane belt and is prone to severe weather. However, it is somewhat protected from the full force of the hurricane by the coral reef that surrounds the island. Now, we'll be landing at the Bermuda International Airport now, named L.F. Wade International Airport. It's the sole airport serving the British Overseas Territory of Bermuda in the North Atlantic Ocean. It's located in the parish of St. George's and is 6 nautical miles northeast of Bermuda's capital city of Hamilton. Now, in 2006, L.F. Wade International Airport handles about 1 million passengers a year. And it has 1 passenger terminal, 1 cargo terminal, 8 aircraft stands, and can support all aircraft sizes up to and including the Airbus A380. Currently, 10 airlines operate seasonal or year-round scheduled services to Bermuda Airport from Canada, the United Kingdom, and the United States. The largest aircraft now operating in regularly scheduled service at Bermuda are British Airways Boeing 777-200s. Eastern Airlines first operated into Bermuda in June 1956 through the merger with Colonial Airlines. Colonial had been awarded the route in 1947 from Bermuda, from New York to Bermuda, and Washington to Bermuda. Now, the longest runway, which we will be landing on today, is runway 12 and 30, which is 9,669 feet. And the airport is 164 feet above sea level. I believe we have one of our passengers that can give us a little more about this beautiful island in the Atlantic Ocean. Dorothy, can you tell us some more?
Yes, I'd be happy to. Thanks, Steve. Bermuda is a group of low-forming volcanoes located in the Atlantic Ocean near the western edge of the Sargasso Sea, roughly about 650 nautical miles east-southeast of Cape Hatteras on the Outer Banks of North Carolina and about 590 nautical miles southeast of Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. It is 892.2 nautical miles northeast of Miami, Florida, and 667.374 nautical miles from Cape Sable Island in Nova Scotia, Canada. The islands lie due east of Fripp Island, South Carolina, west of Spain, and north of Puerto Rico. The archipelago was formed by high points on the rim of the caldera of a submarine volcano that forms a seamount. The volcano is one part of a range that was formed as part of the same process that formed the floor of the Atlantic and the Mid-Atlantic Ridge. The top of the seamount has gone through periods of complete submergence, during which its limestone cap was formed by marine organisms. And during the ice ages, the entire caldera was above sea level, forming an island of approximately 200 square miles. It has 64 miles of coastline. The two incorporated municipalities in Bermuda are the city of Hamilton and the town of St. George. Bermuda is divided into 9 parishes, which have some localities called villages, such as Flat Villages and Somerset Village. Although usually referred to in the singular, the territory consists of 181 islands with a total area of 20.6 square miles. The largest island is the main isle, sometimes called Bermuda. Compiling a list of the islands is often complicated, as many have more than one name as does the entire archipelago, which has only been known historically as La Gaza of Virginia and the Isle of the Devils. Somers Isle is often rendered Somers Island or mistaken for Summer Isles. Despite the small landmass, place names are repeated. There are, for example, two islands named Long Island, three bays named Long Bay on Somerset, Maine, and Cooper's Island, two horseshoe hoedown bays, one in Warwick on the main island, the other at Morgan's Point, formerly Tucker's Island. There are two roads through cuttings called Khyber Pass, one in Warwick, the other in St. George's Parish. And St. George's Town is located on St. George's Island within St. George's Parish, each known as St. George's. There is a Hamilton Parish in addition to the city of Hamilton, which is in Pembroke Parish. Back to you, Neil.
Perhaps the New Eastern will offer service to this beautiful honeymoon destination of newlyweds, which was so popular back in the day, or perhaps we can round up enough Eastern pioneers to charter one of those beautiful Boeing 737s to take us there like our imaginary trip today. And while talking charter, folks, I would like to suggest to our listening audience that if you know of any group that uses large aircraft to take them to and from various activities they are involved in, please let the new company know at www.easternaero.com, or drop a note, and you could actually drop it to Edward Weigel, who is the president and CEO at the Eastern Airlines Group Incorporated, Miami International Airport, 4200 Northwest 36th Street, Building 5A, Miami, Florida, 33166, and telephone them at 305-869-4249. Jill?
Well, since Jill's not here, I would like to add my comment here about what Dorothy was just describing, or I don't know whether it might have been Steve, but Dorothy, the coral in Bermuda along the shoreline is just absolutely beautiful. And it has delivered through that coral the most beautiful beaches I've ever seen. Yeah, I lived in Pensacola for a while, and I always thought the Emerald Islands of or the Emerald Coastline of Florida was the prettiest beaches, and they've been recognized as such. But I tell you, if you ever go to Bermuda, make sure you go that you can pick your own secluded beach, because the rocks will give you, and the pink, it really appears pink, the shore, the sand on the beaches. It's just the most beautiful beaches you've ever seen. And, Jim, I certainly hope Eastern would look at Bermuda for one of its destinations, and I'm sure they have to go through to get a certificate from Miami to the foreign country of Bermuda through the United Kingdom. But what a beautiful island. Yeah, excuse me. Go ahead.
This is Steve, and I have a Bermuda trip that I'd like to share with our listeners that I think would be interesting to them.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Okay. After the engineer strike, and the dates are totally escaped me, but I was demoted to a flight engineer to replace the striking flight engineers. And my first trip assignment was a DC-7 engineer trip from New York to Bermuda. And the only navigation that we had was a Loran whose receiver was just to the right of my head and in the DC-7 engineer seat, and I had absolutely no idea how to do anything except to turn the device on. And so we all agreed about my lack of experience with the Loranzet, and we took off from Newark to Bermuda, and we held a compass heading, and we had a flight plan with waypoints along the route to Bermuda, and we had these estimates. We called in these estimates for these waypoints, for our checkpoints en route, and we made every one of our checkpoints on time until the last one, and we were an hour early for the last one.
Hey, Neil?
Yeah, George?
Yeah, we used to have a great trip out of Kennedy that went was a turnaround, went from Kennedy to Bermuda and back to Kennedy the same day. It was great because it left at an off hour, and you would be home in time for dinner. You could have breakfast at home and then be back home again in time for dinner. And what Steve said, I used to fly that trip a lot with John Cleven. I don't know if you recall his name or not. He was, unfortunately, the captain who was killed on Flight 66 that crashed in the wind shear at Kennedy. But I used to fly with that trip a lot with John, and what Steve said about the Loran A set is absolutely correct. And that was, well, we had the VORs. You're only out of VOR range for probably 30 miles between the VOR, I think it was Colts Neck VOR, and the Bermuda VOR. But
right.
We used the Loran A for those 30 miles. It was amazing. It was a great trip. And then when we'd get to Bermuda, we'd ask the tower for permission, and then we'd do a complete circle around the island to show the people, who, many of whom were honeymooners, what the island was like, so they could get an idea of what it was before we landed.
Yeah, I got my checkout from New York captain on Loran, and to fly Loran, you had to get a check captain to go along with you, and I can't remember. This guy was based in New York, and I know you know him, George, reddish complexion and red hair and all. And golly, he passed away several years ago, and I'll remember it just as soon as we go off air. But he was so forgiving that I had no clue. We were using Loran C, and I had no clue about Loran, and I just figured, well, you know, I'll see if I can bluff my way to Bermuda and back. And I think we took off, and I made Bermuda okay, but coming back, we were going Bermuda, and I think I missed the New York area, but I don't know how far away I was from New York, but it wasn't a pretty trip on the way back. But I don't know how in the world I found Bermuda. To this day, I still don't know how.
Well,
but,
you could pick it up on the radar also, you know, on the weather radar.
Right. That's the only thing that kept me going. And this was in the
787. But within 150 miles, you could pick up the VOR.
Yeah.
Right. But
well,
Neil,
this is 727. They didn't want me to use that. He wanted me to use that Loran C. And
no,
I was
no,
just.
That wasn't a Loran C. That was a Loran A, where you had to line up the hyperbolas.
It was a Loran A. Okay.
Yes. Yep.
But if it was Loran, I was calling it Lorraine. But I had no clue. I had no clue. But golly, Pete, we really it was a great award when we the merger with Colonial is the reason we flew to Bermuda, and we got that beautiful island in the Atlantic Ocean, the jewel of the Atlantic, I would call it now, And I've been there both as a tourist on the Realtors cruise ship, and of course as a working crew member on flights over there. And Jill, I mean not Jill, but Dorothy, the
yes.
roofs are mostly all white.
Wow.
Beautiful white. And I remember someone telling me about that white roof construction over there. It was simply because that they used what do they call that? The water that is collected off the roof.
The rainwater.
There's another something that they collected in the barrels. It was called not artesian, but maybe it was, but it was. The rainfall that was collected, they used in all the homes there. And
wow.
So every home was white-coated roofs and that lime. It was just beautiful, a beautiful island. Best I can recall, the military operated at Hamilton also, along with the commercial carriers. Do you recall that, Guy?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Military installation there. Well, I'm going to turn the microphone back over to Steve in just a minute. I'd like to tell you what a pleasure it was serving you today on our flight to Bermuda, and hope we see you on many new Eastern flights. I feel certain that the new Eastern Airlines is destined to once again be America's favorite way to fly. And we hope all of our passengers will enjoy their stay in Bermuda. Captain Steve?
Thanks, Neil. And this is Steve Thompson, and we are coming in for another great landing. And thank you for traveling aboard our EAL radio show flight every Monday night. Chuck?
East Flight 242, this is Bermuda Tower. You're cleared to land on runway 12. The winds are light and variable from the east at 10 miles per hour, and the present temperature in Bermuda is 82 degrees.
Roger, Bermuda Tower, and we're cleared to land, and we're coming in.
Good landing,
well,
Captain Neil. We had a great show tonight, both
well,
as you.
Jim Hart, before we sign off, this Thursday Americans celebrate the traditional Thanksgiving started back in 1621, 394 years ago. Today, most families and friends come together and around mom's table with all the trimmings. And tonight we want to give pause to the many blessings we have received as individuals and as a nation. And to tell us more about this coming Thursday, November 26th, Dorothy Gagnon would like to offer the following. Dorothy?
Thanks, Neil. Since we are celebrating Thanksgiving this week and coming from Massachusetts, I have some history of how it came about. The Mayflower set sail from England on August 1st, 1620, carrying 102 passengers, 40 of which were pilgrims, and they were led by William Bradford, who before they left for this journey, set up an agreement that established laws for all members of the new community, regardless of religious belief. Sailing to the New World was a long and arduous journey. And when the pilgrims landed in New England in November, they found, according to Bradford's detailed journal, cold, barren, desolate wilderness. During that first winter, half the pilgrims, including Bradford's wife, died of starvation, sickness, or exposure. That winter, Indians taught the settlers how to plant corn, fish for cod, and skin beavers for coats. And though life improved for the pilgrims, they still did not yet prosper. The original contract the pilgrims had entered in with their merchant sponsors in London call for everything they produced to go into a common store, and each member of the community was entitled to one common share. Nobody owned anything. They just had a share in it. Bradford, the governor of the colony, recognized that this contract was as costly and destructive to the pilgrims as that first harsh winter, which had taken so many lives. So he assigned every family its own plot of land to work and permitted them to market its own crops and products. This had very good success because much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been. In no time, the pilgrims found they had more food than they could eat themselves. The first Thanksgiving on Plymouth Rock in Plymouth, Mass. In 1620 was thanking the Lord for guidance and plenty. And once they reformed the system and produced more than they could possibly consume, they invited the Indians to dinner, and since then it has become our yearly Thanksgiving Day and the biggest holiday of the year celebrating with families. Happy Thanksgiving to our Eastern family, and over to you, Neil.
Well, thank you very much for allowing us to share our trip to Bermuda and our thoughts about Thanksgiving. But we do have a number of area codes on our producer, my producer's board. And I think we still have Mary Block, Mary Lee Block from Tennessee.
Yes.
Are you still with us, Mary?
Yes. I am.
Where have you...
I have been thoroughly enjoying the trip.
Well, let me ask you a question. Where have you been with the Sisters on the Fly?
Well, I've been into downtime right now because I've had some family things I needed to help with. So after the first of the year, we'll get going again. But they're out busy doing other things right now. But sometimes, you know, it just happens where you just can't catch up because you've got some other things to take care of.
Well, you still have that beautiful little Shasta trailer?
Oh, I sure do. And she's been all her little scratches and little marks from being out on the highways have all been taken care of. She's just like pristine, brand new. She's a doll baby.
Well, Mary, where do you hang her, that beautiful little doll baby?
Well, I hang her that... Actually, I found a place in Illinois because there are some trips I want to make between the South and the Midwest after the first of the year. So I found this place in Illinois because I can put her in undercover, and I don't want her left out. So I had her down in Rossville, Georgia, having things taken care of on her and with the folks that helped me rehab her. So... I'm bringing her back up to Illinois because, like I said, I want her positioned as you used to position an aircraft so they can
yep.
go in either direction. So that's
right.
what I'm doing this year, is putting her in Illinois at a place that I can get to pretty easily, whether I'm in the Midwest or down in Tennessee, and then take her for trips that are going to be around that part of the country.
Mary, you know, when you... you should be writing a book. I hope you are, collecting all of your notes. And I know a good author that can help you out. He's on the air tonight with us.
Listen, when I was listening to George, all I could think of was, oh, it's Thanksgiving week, and it's just an example of someone paying it forward, and that's exactly what George did for this gentleman.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, and we hope that one of these days, I think your little Shasta is going to be in the Smithsonian Institute.
Listen, there's nothing. I tell everybody my favorite time in the little flyer is you come in after a hard day of playing, and it's evening time, and you put a bag of popcorn, and you throw it in the little microwave, and then you hop up on your feather bed. And, of course, I'm parked where they have TV connection, you understand, for that night. And I click on the TV, and I just reach my arm around, because you know, Neil, the Shasta is a tiny little thing.
Yeah.
I reach my arm around and open up my little refrigerator, pull out my sweet tea, and there she is, propped up against her pillows with her popcorn sweet tea and thinking, boy, this is living.
Folks, if you've never seen a 1960, what is it, 65?
It's 1960.
1960 Shasta. Go on the internet and Google 1960 Shasta, and you'll know what we're talking about, or either go to our website, because we've got pictures of Mary's little wings of man. I guess that's what we call it. What do you call it, Mary?
On the back side, it's called, the name is the Little Eastern Flyer.
Mm. That's good. Nice. That's good.
Nice.
Yeah. Mary, thanks so much for being with us tonight, and we've got some other callers.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you, Mary. Yeah, happy Thanksgiving to everyone. We do have a few other area codes on my producer's board, and we have a few minutes if you'd like to. Just your microphone is open, and come right on in and take part in the last part of our show. Well, since we don't have anyone else to talk with, Jim Hart, I'm going to turn it back
over. I am here.
Where you're going to tell me what a great landing I made in Bermuda.
Absolutely. we had a great show tonight, folks. Mr. Producer, another outstanding show. You know, it's always fun when we talk about Eastern Airlines and the place we work. We feel we've truly earned the title of the radio voice of Eastern Airlines. And it's all because of you, our callers, our listeners, our guests, and our hosts. We look forward to our Eastern family and friends joining us next week as we broadcast our 243rd show, traveling aboard our EAL radio show, Boeing 737. Destination next week is San Jose, Costa Rica, another beautiful Eastern destination. Until that time, ladies and gentlemen, we all say good night, Eastern family.
Good night, good night, Eastern, good night. Family.
Good night, Eastern.
Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving. Good night.
Sunshine.
almost always makes me high. If I had a day that I could give you, I'd give to you a day just like today. If I had a song that I could sing for you, I'd sing a song to make you feel this way. My shoulder makes me happy. Sunshine in my eyes can make me cry. Sunshine on the wall. So lovely. Sunshine almost always makes me high. If I had a tale that I could tell you, tell a tale sure to make you smile. If I had a wish that I could wish for you, I'd make a wish for sunshine. Sunshine almost always.